Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Welcome to this month's edition of Third Thursdays with Ruthie. I'm Ruthie Goodbow, a labor shareholder in Ogletree Deacons, Pittsburgh, and Detroit offices, and co-chair of our firm's traditional labor practice. Today, we're going to discuss the NLRB's representation case rules. That's a mouthful, isn't it? And some very recent changes. So this podcast really is a hot topic. As you all know, one of the most significant process changes by the Obama-era NLRB resulted in shortened timelines from petition to election. We called them the ambush election rules. As we expected, I'm sure you expected as well, changing those rules has been a priority for the Trump NLRB. That process started in 2017, but it's only now getting changed this month, nearly 2 years after the Trump majority on the board. This past Friday, December 13th, the board issued a final rule revising the representation case rules, or R case rules. Today, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about those changes. And here to help me do that is one of my co-chairs of the traditional labor practice, Tom Davis. Tom Davis practices out of our Nashville office. So welcome, Tom.
Hi, Ruthie. Great to be with you.
Okay, Tom, start us off. What's happened in respect to these R case rules?
Yeah, Ruthie, I think we ought to just cover quickly where we are procedurally. As you indicated, we always thought this would be a high priority for the Trump NLRB. And in fact, they started the process back in 2017. But really, nothing ever happened. There was never any finalization of that process. And they didn't do what the Obama board did in 2014, and that was to issue a notice of proposed rulemaking, which is kind of the formal process to change regulations. Fast forward to August of 2019, and the board did issue a notice of proposed rulemaking, but on three very narrow issues. So it really caused a number of us to question, are they ever going to get back to changing the most problematic aspects of the so-called ambush or quickie election rules? Well, they certainly answered that question on Friday when they issued final rules that took up most of the problematic issues and the issues that they had solicited comments on in 2017. But they did it without issuing a notice of proposed rulemaking. And I think that's just worth noting because I'm certain that's going to be a basis for opponents to challenge this. But the reason they did it is because they characterize these changes as procedural, not substantive. And there's an exception under the rulemaking process for procedural changes. And in fact, the board majority said, we've done the same sort of procedural changes more than three dozen times over the history of the NLRB, and we've done those changes without notice and comment rulemaking. So we actually have final rules. They are to be published in the Federal Register, and they will become effective 120 days after they're published in the Federal Register. And that looks like something like April 16th of 2020.
So we have until April 16th. Of next year to get ready for these rules. Why don't you put that into context in terms of when are these rules going to affect me? How does this come into play?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of kind of big picture items that it's worth talking about. And I think most people probably understand anytime there is a petition for union election and an election is scheduled, there are two ways to get there. And most of the time, the parties can agree on all of the details. They can agree on who gets to vote and the time, place, and location for the election. And they enter into what's called a stipulated election agreement, or STIP. That happens more than 90% of the time. If you can't reach agreement on those details, then you have to actually go to a hearing and you get what's called the decision and direction of election. I think it's just worth pointing out almost all of the changes we're talking about today apply in the disputed election context where there's a decision and direction of election, not when you have a stipulated election agreement. So we could easily have regional directors who still push for quick elections when there are stipulated election agreements, as opposed to clearly the process is going to slow down when there's actually a hearing and a necessity for a decision to be issued.
Well, I know we've all, anybody who's been in an election, involved in an election and a petition knows that some of those timelines from petition to election, including on those stipulated election agreements, changes from region to region. So now we understand kind of where these new rules are going to apply. But I understand that the procedural timelines is really a big part of these changes. And frankly, I think it's probably the place that most of us are most interested in. So why don't you talk us through some of the new rules or the changes in this rule in terms of the timeline?
Yeah, and I think that's important. What most of us care about is how fast is this hearing going to happen? When's the election going to take place? And one of the things that existed under both the 2014 amendments and even before 2014 was a mix of, you might count calendar days in some context and you might count business days in other contexts. The 2019 amendments adopt business days for everything. So to your point, we'll see a little bit more uniformity there. But for me, I think about how many weeks am I going to get? So we'll try in some locations, some of the things that we're talking about, to actually convert those business days to calendar days so you'll know how much more time you can expect to get under these new rules. And the last thing I think it's worth pointing out, Ruthie, is the majority was very clear that these 2019 amendments do not rescind the 2014 rules in their entirety. So to the extent we don't talk about a change during the next few minutes together, the 2014 amendments still
I think apply. That's a great point to make, because this is more of a modification of the rules, not a complete set of new rules. So we have to pay attention to that. And I think maybe the best way to do that is for us to kind of walk through the specific amendment to the rules that happened on Friday. So Tom, why don't you first start, talk a little bit about the hearing, the pre-election hearing, and notice obligations.
Yeah, Ruthie, a lot of the changes that were made in 2014 to make the process from petition to election faster were just incremental reductions in time. And one of them was the time between when the petition for election is filed and when any hearing is scheduled to start. And under the 2014 amendments, that was really reduced from 10 to 14 calendar days down to 8 calendar days. We're going to get more time from petition to opening of the hearing under these amendments. And now we're going to have 14 business days. And I basically look at that and I say 14 business days is 2 weeks and 3 or 4 extra days. And so under the 2014 amendments, you were talking about a hearing opening the week after the petition was filed. Now we're probably going to get 3 weeks after the petition is filed before that hearing is going to start. A second change in the 2014 amendments was to create an obligation that the employer post a notice of petition for election and distribute that notice electronically to employees with whom the employer communicates regularly by an electronic means. And under the 2014 amendments, you had to post that notice within 2 business days after the notice of hearing was served on the employer. And I think that was not a big deal, but it was a distraction when you had much more important things to be dealing with. Under the 2019 amendments, we're now going to have a few more days. We're going to have 5 business days instead of 2 business days. The obligation is still there, and there's still an obligation to distribute that document electronically if you customarily communicate with employees electronically. But the change is made clear, you only have to do that to bargaining unit members, and you only have to do that to the employees with whom you customarily communicate electronically. So if you don't communicate to all voters electronically, you don't have to distribute that notice electronically to those employees that you don't use electronic communications with.
I think that's really good news. And I can say personally that the quick pre-hearing, pre-election hearing was always an issue because you didn't have time to really study the bargaining unit, to study what issues you could raise in the hearing. So that's great news. Are we hoping for some similarly great news regarding statements of positions and responses to those statements of position?
Absolutely, Ruthie. As you know, one of the real challenges under the 2014 amendments was the new obligation. When you think there's a need for a hearing to resolve disputed issues, the employer had to prepare and file a statement of position. And it was a distraction, something that you really, but something you really couldn't put aside until you knew whether a hearing was going to be necessary or not. And under the 2014 rules that created that obligation, you had to file that statement of position by noon the day before the hearing, which typically was the seventh day or the eighth day after the petition was filed. And you were probably more importantly, if you were subject to a waiver obligation, if you failed to put an issue in that statement of position, as you suggested under the 2019 amendments, we're going to get more time to prepare and file that statement of position. Although the requirement to file a statement of position was retained by these amendments. In fact, the Trump majority said that these rules were a highly effective tool. But now you only have to file and serve that statement of position by noon, 8 business days after the notice of hearing. So instead of 7 calendar days, you're now going to have 8 business days. And I think that's something like 10 calendar days. You're probably going to get 2 or 3 extra days to prepare and file that statement of position. And there's also a new obligation on the petitioner, in most of our cases, the union, to actually have to prepare a written response to the employer's statement of position. In the 2014 amendments, which created the obligation that the employer prepare and file that statement of position, there was no formal responsive pleading requirement on the union, on the petitioner. They only had to look at your statement of position, and then if you got to the hearing and went on the record, the union, the petitioner, had to provide an oral response. Well, under the new amendments that were issued on Friday, the petitioner must now file and serve a statement of position responding to the issues raised by the employer in its statement of position. And that's due noon, 3 business days before the hearing is set to open. And so essentially, the employer's statement of position will be filed and served on the union in 8 business days. The union will then have 3 business days to consider, draft a response, and file their responsive statement of position. And then the hearing will start 3 business days later. That's the total of 14 business days. And 2 things I think are important. One is that obligation on the petitioner is subject to the same waiver standard that the employer is with respect to having to hit all issues they want to raise. And I think the bottom line, this is going to make unions much more willing to reach agreement on these, on the election details.
I'm especially glad to hear the change related to the obligation of the petitioner, the union, to respond. I know that many of my clients always felt that wasn't equitable, that we had to lay out our case and the union could look at our position statement to prepare, but we didn't have the same kind of concurrent right to see what their case was. I also think it probably is very helpful in reaching some stipulated election agreements, as you mentioned. So what other kind of changes are we looking at? We have just a little bit of time left, and then there's still a bunch more changes. So, Tom, what else are we looking at?
Yeah, one of the crazy things about the 2014 amendments is you often didn't know exactly who was eligible to vote when there were disputes about that issue. The 2014 amendments said issues over individual voter eligibility, who's included and excluded from the unit, even down to who's a supervisor, were issues that could be litigated and resolved after the election, not before, and then only if it is necessary. That's gone now, and the new amendments are going to create a process where if you have disputes over unit scope, voter eligibility, including supervisor status, you are now going to be able to litigate that pre-election and have those issues resolved by the regional director before the election actually takes place. A second aspect of the 2014 amendments was it became very difficult for employers to get the right to file a post-hearing brief in which they raise their issues and arguments and cite to authority. That's something that over the history of the National Labor Relations Act, when you've had a hearing, you almost always get to file a post-hearing brief. Because of the 2014 amendments, you could file those briefs only with special permission from the regional director. And I can tell you, it was not unusual for it to be very difficult to get the right to file a post-hearing brief, something that seems so commonsensical in a legal proceeding. That's been taken care of in these 2019 amendments. And the new rules say that both in pre- and post-election settings, the parties have a right to file a post-hearing brief. They'll be due 5 business days after the close of the hearing. That's basically the same standard that existed before the 2014 amendments. And the hearing officer can actually grant additional time for good cause.
Tom, the amendments that they made this past Friday that are going to go into effect in April on those timelines, very helpful, very encouraging. I think everyone who is on the podcast will feel a kind of a sense of relief to hear that they are going to have a little bit more time. But what about changes to the election itself? On Friday, were there any amendments to that procedure?
Yeah, Ruthie, the lawyers care about two things: when the hearing happens and the date of the election. Most employers care, when's this vote going to take place? And that was something that we saw really sped up, obviously, in the 2014 amendments. And those 2014 amendments said that even after a hearing where a decision is required to resolve disputed issues, that the regional director is to schedule the election for the earliest date practicable, but specified no time frame. And that's really where we ended up with elections that could be scheduled 4, 5, 6, 7 days after a decision is issued. That's probably one of the most significant changes about the amendments that came out on Friday. And that is the standard that the regional director is to apply is unchanged. He's still to schedule the election for the earliest date practicable. But the regs say that will normally not be earlier than 20 business days after the direction of election. 20 business days. So we're talking probably 28, 29, 30 days after a decision is issued. So we're going to have considerably more time between the issuance of a decision and when the election actually takes place.
Were there any changes made to the voter list or anything else that has to do with the election?
A couple of other changes that I think it's worth mentioning. It's always been the requirement that when there is an election scheduled, that the employer has to generate a voter list. It was historically called the Excelsior list. And you had to create that list. It had to have name of each voter and home address. You would then give that to the region of the NLRB, and the NLRB would give it to the union. Under the 2014 amendments, this list still had to be produced, but they expanded greatly the information that had to be contained on the list, and you had to do it much faster. The much faster was it had to be produced and provided in 2 business days. And the much more information was, in addition to name and home address, you had to give all the personal contact information, personal email for the voter, home phone number for the voter, personal cell phone number for the voter. And you had to actually give that to the union directly, not to the region to give to the union. And so we've seen a few changes there, but probably not as many as we had hoped. That list is still due. It's now due in 5 business days, not 2 business days. And I think the bottom line there is you're almost always going to get a weekend to produce that list. But importantly, you still have to give all that objectionable personal contact information to the union, all of what was part of the 2014 amendments, and you still have to give it directly to the union. You don't give it to the board to give it to the union. For some reason, the majority left this aspect of the 2014 amendments unchanged. And I'll mention just a couple of last issues, Ruthie, and then turn it back over to you to close out. This really wasn't addressing anything that was changed as a part of the 2014 amendments. But there's always been kind of confusion about who gets to be an observer when the election actually takes place. Both parties, both the employer and the union, are entitled to an observer. But there have been occasions when there was confusion over whether that had to be a voting unit member, whether it had to be an employee or whether it actually could be a representative of the union who didn't work for the employer. And that's raised some complaints and some confusion with respect to that process. These new rules clarify that the observer actually has to be an employee. A non-employee should never be approved. And in fact, a member of the unit is preferred. If for some reason a member of the voting unit is not available, then it ought to be a non-supervisory employee of the employer. But it can no longer be a non-employee, and in no context can it be a union organizer or a business agent or something like that. And Rufy, I think those are the most significant changes. Certainly, we're going to see a return to what existed in many respects prior to 2014, and just a more reasonable process where you actually have time to contemplate these important decisions, make strategic decisions based on what is important for the organization, and then execute to the extent it requires legal activity, execute those in a reasonable time frame.
Wow. That was a lot to cover in our time we had for the podcast. And, you know, we were talking earlier, and I think a really important point to make is that while these changes do give us some additional time, give us some breathing room, we would not want anybody to take from this that they don't have to be prepared. You know, when the ambush election rules came out, one of the, maybe some would say the only good thing that came out of it, where employers really looked at what did they need to do to be prepared in the event they got a petition. And so we want to make sure, we certainly want to emphasize that these elections will still be quick, even under a stipulated election agreement. They may be shorter time frame than you described, but all of those campaign preparations and strategic preparations that we did in light of the ambush election rules should not be lost. I mean, we should still do those, and they still make a lot of sense. Now, we touched on most of the changes that were announced on Friday, this past Friday. But frankly, there's more detail. There's more to it. Tom did a great job staying within the time limits that I had put on him. But there's some other recent decisions that are very important that you've read about. And so I invite everybody to join us. We'll be having a webinar on January 16th, cover the election amendments, but also some of the new decisions that have recently come out in just the last couple of days. So until next month's Third Thursday, have a great holiday season. Have a wonderful and healthy 2020. And of course, as always, be bold, and mighty forces will come to your aid.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.